All right, it's Friday. Phil Reuter with you, filling in for Jim. Jim back on Monday. Thank you for being here. We appreciate you listening on CBS Sports Radio, watching on CBS Sports Network, or, Britt, this is for you, streaming JimRome.com. Brand new thing, we're into it. By the way, the program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. I might be getting too comfortable filling in, cracking some jokes in the hallway. Might be my last time. I don't know. We'll see what the repercussions are. That look on Ridd's face. Either way, I'm having a great time being here. Love the opportunity to fill in and sit in for the most impressive person to ever do this job for a living. And if you want to give us a call, if you want to reach out, there's a few ways. Phone number, and we'll get to some calls here in a sec. 1-800-636-8686. 800-636-8686. Rome at haveatake.com. Jim on Twitter at Jim Rome. You can also hit me up at Sports Writer, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. Thank you to Jared Greenberg just a few minutes ago, NBA on TNT reporter, for making some time. If you miss that interview, anything that you want to revisit, you can always get it on the podcast, jimrome.com. It's very similar to streaming, Garrett, in that it's like it's out there in the cyber internet's world. We'll do some NBA predictions in about 15 or 20 minutes. We'll talk some baseball with Matt Snyder, excellent CBSSports.com MLB writer, in about 30 or 40 minutes. We'll get with Jim Jackson, former NBA player, in an hour and a half, and hit some other things throughout the show. One of the most riveting sporting events that I've ever attended, and you know, this is a well-dug comment, but when you get to do this for a living, you get to go to a lot of cool stuff. But the fight between Daniel Cormier and Jon Jones, that is actually a loss for D.C. and Vegas, that must have been 5 years ago, was one of the most interesting fights I've ever been to. Because, and for those of you that aren't huge UFC fans or that just don't know D.C., Daniel Cormier is genuinely one of the nicest superstars you will ever meet. And if he wins this fight tomorrow against Stipe Miocic at UFC 252, that is presumably the culmination of their showdown in this trilogy match. Each of them have won a match, by the way. Cormier is going to be the greatest heavyweight in the history of the UFC and certainly in contention for the greatest heavyweight in the history of MMA. And by the way, same thing for Miocic. I mean, you're talking about in Daniel Cormier, a guy that's lost two fights in his career. One was to Miocic in one of their two matches. They're one-on-one against each other. And interestingly, in each of those showdowns, in each of those fights, DC won the first. But if you remember, this is 2 years ago, Miocic actually dominated early in that fight. And DC, who's obviously a wrestler, that's his strength, wants to get Miocic to the ground, was able to do that and eventually be effective. And this is a smaller cage at UFC 252, which is a huge advantage for DC. And then in the second fight, which almost exactly 365 days from when this fight at UFC 252 is going to take place, it was the other way around. Cormier looked like the better fighter, looked like he was going to dominate that fight early on, and Miocic caught him and knocked him out. It's going to be a hell of a fight. And the thing about DC is he's got the one fight that he lost against Miocic, and Miocic is a stud. Don't get me wrong. An absolute stud. Then he's got a fight against Jon Jones, and I understand the complicated nature of trying to assess not just Jon Jones, but DC, because they're so connected to each other. Because on the one hand, Jon Jones is the most talented fighter I've ever seen, and maybe in the history of the sport. On the other hand, he's a blatant cheater, and that's an absolute fact. And you have to put a giant asterisk next to anything that he accomplished, especially against Daniel Cormier. I mean, that was at the fight where Jon Jones beat him, but then it got vacated because he's a, you know, cheater. And DC was so emotionally devastated. In that fight, too, DC looked like he was going to beat Jon Jones, so Jones caught him. So Cormier's not just fighting against Stipe Miocic. That's true, of course. He's not just fighting for his own legacy. That's true, of course, too. But I think winning this fight finally severs his legacy from that of a flagrant cheater who soiled in Jon Jones, not just Jon Jones' reputation, but in some way soiled Cormier's opportunities. Who knows what happens if Jones fights DC where the playing field is level. And I don't want to disrespect Stipe Miocic, who is as talented as Cormier. These guys, this is going to be such an incredible match. Miocic obviously is the defending champion. Cormier is the top-ranked heavyweight fighter in the world. with really different styles, but to get to this level, you obviously have to evolve and become the kind of fighter that can do other things. Miocic's ability to strike, his striking abilities, is relentless, and we saw this in the fight in which he beat DC. It takes one good turn, one moment of space, one opportunity to win that fight. But Cormier, in his fights with Jon Jones, just over the course of what's been an incredible career, has clearly found a way to fend those things off. In fact, a big part of the reason, and I think it's part, for me, it's why I like Cormier in this fight. I used to bet a lot of money on the UFC, and it's the only sport that I've ever won a lot of money betting on, for whatever reason. I am up thousands of dollars in UFC fights. I am down a good chunk of money in NFL bets, and, you know, even in those other sports, and even always feels like a victory if you're a gambler. One of the things about Cormier and why I like him in this fight, I'm not going to put money down because I don't feel that good about it, but if I were going to, is that DC got so comfortable with his striking game and his ability to stay on his feet and go up against guys, including Stipe Miocic, who are supposed to be dominant in that respect, that in that last fight that DC could have won, he didn't focus on getting Miocic to the ground. He got cocky. And, you know, he's talked about this. He got overconfident. And you can't do that against a talent like Miocic, and Miocic can't do it against a talent like Daniel Cormier. It is going to be an epic and incredible fight. And the thing for me that makes it more riveting and more interesting, and let me do a quick sort of aside here, but it's the fact that I like both of these guys. Here's the aside. I understand you don't have to like people to root for them. They don't have to be the best husbands or fathers or human beings to be worthy of our time and our attention. I'm a child of Michael Jordan. And as much as I found The Last Dance to be really interesting, and I found Jordan to be more likable because I saw a more authentic side of him, that doesn't make him a super likable guy. It just doesn't. Jordan was a winner in large part because he channeled things that made him unlikable. You can be both. He got emotional and cried on camera about it. And I think those nuances are interesting. But it doesn't make him the greatest guy on the face of the earth. I would not personally choose to live my marriage and my life as a husband and father the way that Michael Jordan did. I referenced an hour ago and then got a text from my 11-year-old daughter, so that'll be a fun conversation later, that there are some NBA players in the bubble who, breaking news, aren't faithful to their wives. By the way, like a lot of people in a lot of walks of life. I'm not judging them. Not my personal way of life. That has nothing to do whether they're good at playing basketball or not. There are a lot of guys who are complete jerks that I've interacted with in sports, and it doesn't matter unless it impacts their team. I always take shots at Chris Paul because I find it funny and true, but the only reason I bring up Chris Paul's sort of interactions with people is because it impacted his teammates. Chris Paul's one of, I don't know, 150 guys who have treated me like absolute garbage in my career. I don't care unless their personality is so difficult and toxic with non-media members. Nobody cares how media members get treated, including me, that it impacts their team. Then there's, you know, the average guys, nice guys. It's rare you get people who are actually awesome dudes. And rarer still in the UFC where both of those guys in a fight this historic are worth rooting for on a personal level. And they are. Jon Jones against DC was riveting for a lot of reasons. One was you wanted Cormier to win so badly because he's such a good guy. And I wanted Jon Jones to get his face pounded in because he's not. Look, I know Conor McGregor. I was at that fight too, the McGregor-Mayweather. I knew McGregor wasn't going to win that fight. But not saying Conor McGregor is a paradigm of excellence, virtue, and morality. But who didn't want to see Floyd get the crap kicked out of him at the end of his career? I did. I'm not like hurt like in a hospital bed, but two black eyes and, I don't know, feeling it for the next 3 weeks? I was down for that. Because you root against bad guys in life and you root for good guys. I've talked about this a lot with buddies of mine. I got in this business because I'm a huge sports fan. And every job changes you. What changed for me is I used to root for teams based on, I'm a Cubs fan, right? I root for the Cubs. I hate the Cardinals. I went to Mizzou. I root for Missouri. I hate Kansas. And it changes when you have access to people. You start to root for human beings. And what I'm about to say is the equivalent of a Yankees fan rooting for the Red Sox or insert whatever rivalry you want. When I was working at the Kansas City Star and I got to know Bill Self, I found myself rooting for that Kansas team, which is the kind of thing that can get you excommunicated from your family or your state in Missouri. But he's a good guy. And as I got to know some figures at Missouri's athletic department, I couldn't root for Mizzou. I know good guys are supposed to finish last. They don't always. And tomorrow, in that fight where the title's on the line, Cormier's legacy is on the line, maybe the mantle of greatest heavyweight in the history of MMA, certainly I think, and I think this is beyond dispute, the greatest heavyweight in the history of the UFC is on the line, and really the future of Cormier's career, because whether he retires or not, and I know in the UFC guys retire and unretire all the time, DC's a 41-year-old. Heavyweights can go longer in their careers, I get it. But the outcome is probably going to have a huge impact on whether or not he continues. This is a guy that did not want to fight after he was 40. You're also going to be looking at two really good guys. I've had more experiences with Cormier. Probably interviewed him, I don't know, in person 10 times and on, you know, video or whatever, 30. And just UFC, especially back in the day before it became this massive, massive thing, a reporter could just kind of show up and hang out. I remember 10 years ago, I went to some random UFC fight and just hung out and drank with Dana White for 7 days for a story, which was the most fun I've had in my career. I didn't drink with Cormier, but I've been around him. He's a good guy. He's an authentically good dude. I don't know Stipe Miocic that well. Very few people do. But this is a guy that's an actual firefighter in Ohio. And not like a fake, let's do some photos, snap some photos. I'm not making fun of Shaq at all, by the way, in Miami. And just like pretend that we're doing this. Because Shaq was good with that too. But Miocic is like an actual, like cleans toilets, does the work, puts himself in harm's way. And everybody is a UFC expert. I'm a fan, I'm not an expert. Will tell you, Miocic is the real deal and a good dude. You've got the greatest soccer player in the history of the game today in Messi going up against Bayern Munich. You've got maybe the greatest NBA player in the history of the game starting his run for the Lakers in a few days in LeBron James. And you might have the greatest heavyweight in the history of that sport declaring themselves over the second greatest tomorrow in UFC 252. It is going to be a hell of a weekend for sports. And at least for once, I'm glad that I can sit down on my couch, drink some beer, and root for both of those guys. I think Cormier is going to win that fight because I do. And there's a line of thought that because what's going to happen is whoever wins this fight, in theory, would fight Francis Ngannou. But that's not going to happen. Ngannou's probably going to fight Miocic because presumably Cormier is going to retire. So I know there's a thought out there that Stipe has no pressure because even if he loses DC and he loses the heavyweight crown, it gets vacated when DC retires and he gets a fight against Francis. But you're playing for a level of legacy, right? You're fighting for a level of greatness that is historic. Both these guys are going to give it their all. I think it's DC who's got the advantage. If this is really his last fight, if it's really time to go, and only he knows that deep down, he is going to leave everything in that octagon. And an octagon, by the way, that is the smaller size, which obviously benefits a guy that wants to grapple and go to the ground and not strike. I like Cormier. I like Cormier, and I say this all the time on this show and other places. Bill Ryder, by the way, filling in for Jim Rome. Real greatness isn't defined by not failing. It's defined by learning from those failures. And DC's biggest failure of his career was getting cocky against Stipe Miocic. I'm not the big asterisk of the cheater against John Jones. There's no failure there other than bad luck having to be tied to that guy. But he did, DC, fail because he got cocky, because he got arrogant. He got too comfortable against Miocic. I promise you he won't make that mistake today, or tomorrow, excuse me. I promise you he's going to do everything he can to make sure that fight gets to the floor, gets to the ground. I like Daniel Cormier to win what's going to be an incredible, incredible UFC 252. All right, give us a call. Love your take. Love your perspective. See you calling in. We'll get some of these calls. 1-800-636-8686 is the phone number. RomanHaveATake.com at Jim Rome. I'm on Twitter, Sports Writer, Sports, R-E-I-T-E-R. Some phone calls, and if we have time, we'll sneak in some NBA predictions in a moment here on the Jim Rome Show.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back into the Jim Rome Show. My name is Bill Ryder. I am filling in for Jim. Happy Friday. Time to ask the pros. Where you, the clones, get to ask us a question brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Go to cbssportsradio.com/askthepros and submit your question. Be listening later in the show. when I might answer your question. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Matt Snyder, MLB national writer for CBSSports.com, will be on the show in a few minutes, maybe 15 or 20 of those minutes. Jim Jackson, next hour. Phone number here on the Jim Rome Show, 1-800-636-8686. Rome at haveatake.com, at Jim Rome, jimrome.com. You can hit me up at Sports Writer, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. Let's go to my guy, Matt in L.A. Matt, you're back on the Jim Rome Show.
Billy, from Mission Viejo to Myanmar, from Hermosa Beach to Helsinki, you're welcome. The Matt in L.A. montage is pleasuring your eyeballs as the Bill Ryder sports talk is pleasuring your ear holes. Right quick, before I forget, I'm down with Texas, so this ain't a Texas thing. War Bodie, war Johnny Whiteface, but hey, Jerome in Houston, you suck. Just like those cheating-ass Astros. All right, now that we got that out of the way, Billy, I'm loving what I'm seeing out of the Dodgers, out of your Cubs. These teams that are seizing the moment out here, about to do some business in this crazy-ass 2020 year. So I'm calling my shot. I think the Cubs and the Dodgers are going to be meeting up. And also, no surprise here, I'm going Lake Show, but I think people are going to be surprised by who I have against the Lake Show. And that's going to be an old-school Celtics-Lakers rivalry. But 88 is the year of L.A. Make no mistake, clones, hate all you want, but this is us. War James Kelly and Johnny Whiteface moonlighting at the Milwaukee sausage races. War DA's mouth being used as a storage compartment for hand sanitizers and paper towels at the NYC sports headquarters. But unwar, Drizzle using a corn cob as a comb after bathing in a Wichita creek. Outro.
Thank you. I love Matt in L.A. Thank you, Matt in L.A. Appreciate you. Appreciate you, buddy. It is a season of high expectations for L.A. And the thing that Matt illustrates that I find fascinating about Southern California is the Clippers are much more of a nationally interesting team than a locally interesting team. If the Clippers win an NBA championship, I'm telling you, it's not going to feel like an L.A. champion. Well, what would that parade look like? Like, are nine people going to show up and just sort of march themselves down the streets? And I think the Clippers are the better team. The Dodgers are absolutely one of the three best teams in baseball. I mean, the Cubs, before the season, I would have put them well above the Cubs, but the Cubs have played so well and started so well. What I love about the Dodgers are a few things. One, I think the shortened season is going to benefit Clayton Kershaw because they're not going to overload his arm like they've done. And two, if I'm a Dodgers fan, for all the things that you like about that team, but what's going on. And look, Mookie Betts just set a record for three home run games. But I love that Corey Seager is back. Looks like he's healthy. That swing looks incredible. That Dodgers team is so dangerous. The problem, Matt, for picking the Dodgers or picking the Cubs or picking anybody, picking the Yankees, and I'll hit this with Matt Snyder. I'm obsessed with that. I think it's incredibly fascinating. Those best of three series in baseball would be like having a first round of the NBA playoffs that's winner take all in one game. Three games in a baseball series is a coin flip. Any team in baseball can beat any other team in baseball two out of three. You can be the worst team in the – that is not true over the course of a seven-game series. The longer a series goes, obviously, the more sampling error does not impact things and talent does. It's going to be really, really interesting to see how it plays out. Appreciate, buddy, the call. I do want to – all right, so let's do this. Matt gave us a little Lakers prediction. I think the Lakers are in trouble. Trouble's a little strong. You have LeBron James. I think the Lakers are not the force they should be. They are out of rhythm. LeBron has this weird frustration thing going on. We don't know what it is, but those things are impactful. And I'm gonna keep beating this drum. Avery Bradley's presence is incredibly significant. It is remarkably problematic. He's their best individual defender as measured by the shooting percentage he holds opponents to. And he was the best individual defender by the same metric against the Clippers he faced in the three games they played each other. And that's before you get into the fact that that is a Lakers team, notwithstanding their win against a Denver squad that didn't play their starters in the fourth quarter, that does not play well offensively. And the ability to hit open shots, because they're going to get some, is going to be really critical. All right, let's go through it. Lakers, Portland. I'm not going to be Chuck here. I'm not going to get crazy and say Portland's going to beat the Lakers. I think they can. I can't really, like, weak out, is that a term? Cop out here and not pick in the first pick. So I'm going to pick the Lakers. But I think that is a really close series. I think it's the kind of series where if Damian Lillard draws first blood, steals a game, they get up 2-1 or 2-0, LeBron James teams can collapse under the weight of what it's like to be around LeBron when he's frustrated. But I'm gonna go Lakers. Give me the Lakers with the win.
That's what?
Seven. LeBron, I'm going seven, dude. I'm sorry.
If it's greatness out here, cuz.
Yeah, you are. But if it's Memphis, Lakers in three. Memphis surrenders the fourth game. They just throw up the white flag. Clippers beat the Mavericks. I think that game goes six. I think Luka Doncic wins at least one game on his own. And I think the Clippers lose a game as they try to figure out that rotation. And Jared Greenberg told us that their top eight scorers haven't played together this year. The Clippers are going to be in fighting form and dangerous by the conference finals. Not the first round. Clippers.
What they do, baby?
Paul George, whatever. Kawhi's the man. Kawhi will be doing his silly laugh by the end of October, I think. So weird. Who's got the weirdest laugh on this show? Rit? Why'd everybody look at Rit? It's not really true because only one other person here, but I enjoy that. I enjoy the gag. Yeah, I've gotten comfortable. What can I say? Oh, snap. The Denver Nuggets get no love and no respect. If there was actual home court advantage, I would have the Nuggets maybe as a dark horse to make a deep run because it's hard to play in Denver. That is a great arena. And the altitude matters when they have a great team. Michael Porter Jr., and I know I'm a Mizzou guy, so I'm a little biased, but the guys looked incredible. Bol Bol's played some minutes and been really impactful. They're going to beat the Jazz. I don't know that they're going to have what it takes, the Nuggets, to beat the Clippers. I'm going Clippers. I'm basically going chalk. Thunder Rockets is such a great series. I think the Thunder are probably a better team, but the Rockets are going to shoot 63-point shots or 73-point shots per game. They're going to win some games they shouldn't. And as talented as Chris Paul has been, this is true of James Harden too, his teams have always looked really good in the regular season. They're always a team that people are paying attention to, and they never accomplish what they're supposed to in the playoffs. I'm going Rockets over the Thunder in six. I think the Lakers have a huge level of difficulty with the Rockets. I think the Rockets push them, and I think James Harden utterly disappears in a game six or a game seven. To quote one of the great, highfalutin, sophisticated movies of all time, Swingers, the past is prelude to this. We have seen who James Harden is, and he's going to be great until there's, you know, a conference finals or a finals appearance on the line. It's going to be chalk in the Western Conference, Lakers, Clippers. I'm going Clippers over the Lakers, and I might get crazy and go in five. I think eventually the chaos is the Lakers don't play the way that they should. And on the other side of it, the Bucks beat the Magic, similarly to if Memphis were to beat Portland twice in three when Orlando simply gives up and there's a fourth game where no one's trying. Raptors crush the Nets. Celtics crush the Sixers. Heat-Pacers is such a good series. I'm going to go Heat in seven. Heat pushed the Bucks to six. Celtics over the Raptors in a shocker. Celtics over the Bucks in the finals. Give me Clippers, Celtics. Here's a fun fact for you. I've already dropped it on the show a few weeks ago. I'm going to do it again. Only three teams in the NBA this year are top five in both offensive and defensive rating. That is, there's a strong correlation in the last 20 years between teams that are top five in both offense and defense in the NBA regular season and winning an NBA championship. And those three teams are the Los Angeles Lakers, the Los Angeles Clippers, and the Boston Celtics. And I think that the way they're coached, the fact they all understand their roles, and I mean this, the fact Kyrie Irving's gone, the addition by subtraction and the closeness of bond to that team, It would be like if you had a family and everything was great and an evil stepmother came into the picture and just ruined everything, got her claws into the husband, and then she was just like, I'm out, I found somebody better. The family would love each other even more. The family dinners would be even more remarkable once they'd realized what had been jeopardized. That is Kyrie Irving. He is the evil stepmother in this situation. Kyrie is, by all accounts, a very nice guy. But he is one of the most toxic locker room guys we've seen in the NBA. It really should enhance LeBron James' legacy that he won a championship with Kyrie. Because when Kyrie went to Boston, that team underperformed. And they're going to do the same thing with the Nets. And I'll take Clippers to win the whole thing. And consider this. When, because my predictions are, you know, they're never wrong. I think I've ever been wrong on this stuff. When the Clippers win an NBA championship, not only will Kawhi Leonard have as many NBA Finals MVPs with different teams than any player in the history of the game in three, he will have won as many championships as LeBron James. And at 5 years younger, you will start to hear talk across the sports world, maybe Kawhi's better than LeBron. And when that happens, it becomes, I wonder if Kawhi's a top three or five player of all time. Clippers win. Kawhi gets as many championships as LeBron James. And unlike with LeBron, Kawhi becomes the guy that can't lose when he's healthy because he's the best player on earth when it matters most. And that makes him, in the eyes of a lot of you, more like Jordan than LeBron will ever be. Oh, yeah. Let your head explode. I love that. All right. Let's do this. That's the same sound that that Ritt made when he found out streaming existed yesterday. Like, there's a lot going on. All right. Let's get with Matt Snyder, CBSSports.com. We'll talk a little baseball here on the Jim Rome Show just after we get a CBS Sports Radio update with Bob Huesler.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Bill Ryder on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you. Happy Friday. Thanks for being here. Remember, tomorrow on CBS, the PGA Tour is back on the course with players teeing off at the oldest golf tournament in North Carolina, the Wyndham Championship. Live coverage begins tomorrow at 3 Eastern, 12 Pacific on CBS. Hit us up here on the program if you are so inclined. 1-800-636-8686. Rome at HaveATake.com, at Jim Rome on Twitter. I'm on there, sports writer, sports, R-E-I-T-E-R. Man, golf's in full swing. It is so nice to have sports back. And I know, and we talked about this a lot yesterday, college football ain't looking good. We'll see if the SEC and those other conferences that are plowing forward can make it work. But golf and baseball and the NFL and the NHL and MLS, hopefully bode well for the National Football League. Give baseball credit. After a rocky start, it looks so far so good. And we're going to get into that and some other topics with one of my favorite guys, one of my favorite baseball writers in the country, Matt Snyder from CBSSports.com, fellow Cubs fan. Hello, Mr. Snyder. Happy Friday.
Hey, man. Happy 13-3 start, huh?
Yeah, I mean, dude, like, I am, even with the Cubs winning a World Series back in 16, I am trained not to get too overly optimistic about these Cubbies. So you either slow me down or you get me even more excited. What is the right read on this incredible start for our Cubs?
I'll get you more excited, right? Actually. Bryant hasn't really gotten going. Javi's capable of much better. Schwarber's probably going to hit better. It's the bottom half of the lineup has kind of been carrying them. They're getting stuff from Kipnis, from Bodie. Ian Happ's been unbelievable. The rotation's been unbelievable, and the bullpen's been atrocious. And they're still 13. I've seen some arguments like, well, they haven't played anybody. Well, that's, you know, a lot of people thought the Reds and Brewers were going to be good. They're beating up on them. They swept the Indians in two games. So, and, you know, all you got to do is take care of business when you play teams like the Royals and Pirates. So I think they look like one of the best teams in baseball right now.
Matt Snyder, I know that there's some disagreement among experts like yourself to what degree a manager has an actual impact on the game in terms of how many wins can a manager really be worth. Where do you come down on this, and how much, as a result, do you give David Ross credit or not for what we're seeing?
I think there's probably far less impact than like the NFL with like play calling and stuff like that, because in baseball you kind of fill in the lineup and then let them play. But I think that there comes a time with a lot of different teams, it happens actually with almost every team, where you need a change. Like if you have like an authoritarian leader for 4 or 5 years, then you need to get like a player-friendly guy in there, like a Dusty Baker type. I feel like the last 2 years, Joe Maddon was kind of checked out and just let the players do whatever they wanted, and they got lazy. And as several of them, Javier Baez, Wilson Contreras, have admitted as much, that they just kind of got lazy and lackadaisical, and, you know, that led to their collapse last September. David Ross, I feel like, has reborn the culture in that locker room, and they've rallied around him, and you keep seeing reports. Ken Rosenthal talked about it on Fox last night, where he said there are guys, bench coach Andy Green said he's never seen a team that loves and respects its manager as much as the Cubs love and respect David Ross. Some of that might just be, you know, words and people just saying stuff just to say stuff. It might just be rhetoric, but I feel like, just from watching it so far, I feel like it's real.
Matt, you mentioned the Brewers and the Reds. A lot of folks thought this was going to be a four-team race in the NL Central.
Yeah.
Cardinals have played 5 games. The Cubs have beat up on the other 2 teams that you referenced. We still have some time to go, even though every game is basically a series this year. How many teams are going to be in competition this year? How many teams are you taking seriously in that division?
I still think you have to say 4, although I don't think the Brewers are that good at all. You look at the lineup they're running out. Lorenzo Cain opted out. Christian Yelich isn't going well. Now he's gotten a little better, but he still doesn't seem right. And the rest of that lineup just seems really punchless to me. I mean, I think Kesson Hero is good, but you've got Eric Sogard leading off. Whatever. Abisail Garcia hitting in the 4 hole. The lower half of that lineup, nobody really looks to me like, oh yeah, he's going to have a big year. Ryan Braun's 3 for 21. I don't think the Brewers are that good, but they're better than this. I think they're better than this. And the Reds, I don't understand. They have the personnel. They should be way better. They have a big 3 in the rotation. The bullpen should be a lot better. The lineup should be hitting better. They've had an awful lot of Royals, Tigers, and Pirates on their schedule, and they're not taking advantage of it. I think they'll get better, but at some point you got to show me. It's been the last 3 years I thought the Reds were going to be better, and they just haven't shown us.
All right, so Matt Snyder, sticking with the National League, are the Marlins a really good baseball team, or are they like the Mariners? Was it last year or the year before the Mariners got off to that crazy hot start? Last year.
The Mariners were 13-2 last year.
There it is.
And through 60 games ended up 25-35. That's who the Marlins are, and I have a feeling that's who the Orioles and Tigers are as well.
All right, so give me one team. I love the idea of parity in sports, and I know that's not usually what you're going to get in Major League Baseball, but we've got a shortened season. We got a best-of-3 playoff series you and I should dive into here in a second. Any teams that aren't, you know, the usual Cubs, Yankees, A's, Tampa Bay, Cardinals, Astros, Dodgers, who you take seriously this year because of the shortened season, what you've seen, and the really wacky playoff structure we're going to have?
Well, it ended up being a 4-game split, but the Padres took the first 2 games against the Dodgers. That could be an 8-1 where the Padres won 2 in Dodger Stadium and eliminated the 1-seed Dodgers. That could absolutely happen. I think the Padres are really, really fun. They could run out a pretty good playoff rotation. Now, Chris Paddock got battered around last night, but I like Paddock. I like Garrett Richards at the front of that rotation in a 3-game series. You could definitely see them doing something like going and getting the Dodgers, whether it's a 7-2, 3-6, or 1-8 game, something like that. I could absolutely see the Padres making some noise. And I don't want to sleep on the Angels. They've gotten off to a terrible start, but I feel like a lineup that has Mike Trout and Anthony Rendon toward the front, in a short playoff series, anything could happen. Those two guys could carry an offense.
Wow, I love the Angels love. And I know that our friends here on the Jim Rome Show at 97.3 The Fan, the home of the Padres down in San Diego, love that Padres love. It's the same story every year at the Dodgers. They are always the most talented. And give Andrew Friedman credit. I mean, he has inherited, a few years ago, a very successful team, and has just continued to turn that farm system into a producer of really young talent. He's incredible at what he does, and yet they have yet to win a World Series. Not easy to do. How do you handicap the Dodgers' chances this year? Not just based on what you've seen, but the fact that you got to win a best of three series against somebody in the playoffs.
Yeah, they're probably the most equipped for a normal season, a 162-game season, only five teams in the playoffs per league. They probably would get the one seed and would get a wild card again, but they lost that last year. It's the short series flukes that can happen sometimes. But the most impressive thing about them to me is the organizational depth. You have a guy go down and they plug somebody in and he's a stud. It's happened all over the roster, whether it's the bullpen, the rotation, the lineup, it doesn't matter. They just plug guys in and they're beasts. The organizational depth is impressive, but the thing is, in this season, it doesn't matter as much. As long as you're not having a bunch of cases, it's such a short run. The best teams that are equipped for a season like this are the ones who have the absolute top-tier talent and not necessarily the most depth. Now, the Dodgers do have top-tier talent, but, man, you're going to have to deal with a three-game series. Anything can happen in there. It's bad for the Dodgers. They could still win the World Series. They're still one of the best teams. I'd put them toward the top. It's just, this is completely opposite of the season that the Dodgers needed.
Matt, what do you make of the best of three series? I mean, for folks who don't follow baseball as closely, or we've never seen this, anybody can win two out of three games. How much chaos are you anticipating?
Think about this. Last year, the first series that the Orioles played the Yankees, one of the best teams in baseball against one of the worst teams in baseball. The Orioles took 2 of 3. The Yankees won the next 16 against the Orioles.
Wow.
But the first time they played, the Orioles won 2 out of 3. So if that was a playoff series, the Orioles would have beat the Yankees. The 100-some loss Orioles against the 100-some win Yankees. Craziness can happen. I think it will. I'm looking forward to it. In a normal season, I would be so against this because this is not how baseball was meant to be played. It wasn't meant to have a 162-game marathon followed by an 8 seed against a 1 seed in a 3-game series. That's not how it was meant to go down. But in this situation, under these circumstances, with a 60-game regular season, give me all the chaos you've got. Bring it. I want it.
All right, Matt Snyder, since neither of us will ever underestimate the greed of folks who can produce a lot of money. Let me ask you this. Let's say even if a best of three series is not particularly fair or good for teams, if it's great for ratings, if people tune in, if the drama inherent in that, what's the likelihood we see some version of this in the future in Major League Baseball?
What I think they're going to do is what they floated back in January, February, I don't know, who even knows anymore? This year's felt
like, I know, right?
5 years.
I hear you.
The scenario that was floated was 7 teams per league. The 1 seed gets a bye, and then you have like 2 versus 7, 3 versus 6, 4 versus 5 in 3-game series, and then you move forward. And the 1 seed gets to pick who their opponent is going to be after that. I think that's what they're going to end up doing. I think it's completely unfair to make a 1 seed face an 8 in a 3-game series. So I think they're going to incentivize being the best team in the league and then going to 7 teams per league. And I'm fine with that.
Matt Snyder here on the program. Excellent MLB national writer for CBS Sports. Matt Snyder, CBS on Twitter. This is the Jim Rome Show. I'm Bill Ryder filling in for Jim. Matt, we had not that long ago a couple outbreaks of COVID-19 with a couple teams that shut down a whole bunch of games. As you and I talked about, still, the Cardinals have only played 5. Other teams have played 18, 19, 20. Where do you think things stand with Major League Baseball trying to continue to contain these kind of outbreaks and their confidence level and your confidence level in having a complete season?
Once the Cardinals play, I'm going to be pretty confident. I think what we've seen with the Marlins coming back and the Phillies coming back, and now hopefully tomorrow the Cardinals coming back, is the ability to deal with this and then come back and start making up games. Sure, there could be another outbreak, but then you see situations like with the Indians and how much Zach Plesac and Mike Clevenger they've caused so much problem in the clubhouse. And you saw Adam Plutko go after Clevenger and Plesac publicly during a press conference. I think that we're getting to the point where it's sinking in with most of the players that we've got to take this seriously. We've got to stay in our hotel rooms and play games, and that's it. It's only a couple months. A lot of people are suffering. In order to get this done, and yes, to get all of our money, we have got to take this seriously. So I'm pretty confident once the Cardinals come back, I will be very confident. Now, I'm not confident everybody playing 60. I don't think we're going to get even close to that, but I'm confident we're going to get it done.
And so, Matt Snyder, last question for you before I let you go, circling back to the most important topic of all, our Chicago Cubs, your confidence level, percentage-wise, that you and I will be texting about another Cubs World Series appearance in a few months.
Ooh, World Series appearance. Percentage level. 20?
I love 20.
20%?
I'll take it.
Yeah.
All right. We're doing it.
I mean, the playoffs are such a crapshoot, but I'm very confident at this point they're going to win the Central.
Matt Snyder, great stuff. Appreciate you, buddy. Thank you for being on the Jim Rome Show, man.
All right, have a good one.
See you, dude. Matt Snyder knows the game, played at Indiana. Matt Snyder, CBS on Twitter. Read him over at CBSSports.com. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, you know how momentum in baseball has always been this weird, important factor that goes against the grain of the marathon nature of the regular season? It's a total crapshoot in the first round of the playoffs for the best of three series. But I think you're going to see whichever teams, the juggernauts, the Yankees, the Cubs, the Dodgers, the Astros, whoever, the A's, the Twins, that actually make it out of that best of three are going to be so relieved. I think that'll create its own momentum. You may not get through if you're one of the big boys, but if you do, you have a great chance of finding your groove and what's going to be the most interesting, bizarre playoffs we've seen in a really long time. I want to get into Damian Lillard and what he represents as the anti-LeBron James. I don't think he gets enough credit for sticking around, for not being all these guys that bounce back and forth. We'll do that topic here on the Jim Rome Show in just a minute.